World War I was great for New Hampshire's immigrant workforce. The mills were booming and jobs were plentiful. But as thousands of Americans returned home from war, there was a growing distrust of the immigrant in general, and of Russians in particular.
Unemployment is high. In 1919 alone, there were something like 3,600 strikes in America. So we're looking for a scapegoat.
New Hampshire historian Stu Wallace.
The fear we had was when we looked at the Bolshevik, or what we call the Red Revolution in Russia, we heard the verbiage of people like Lenin talking about exporting the revolution to other countries, that this was an international movement, the workers of the world were going to rise up. And as a result of the economic problems here, we had strikes. There were anarchist bombings. Who knows who was responsible for half of those? And so there's a fear beginning to develop in the country by the middle to late 1919 that the Red Revolution is coming to the United States.
U.S. Attorney General A. Mitchell Palmer and his young assistant J. Edgar Hoover had a plan to rid the country of these so-called subversives. On January 2, 1920, federal agents, along with local police, conducted a series of raids in New Hampshire and 23 other states. Stu Wallace picks up the story.
They just stormed into Russian homes, Russian workplaces, Russian baths and other clubs, and started rounding up Russians. They rounded them up in Berlin. They rounded them up in Claremont, in Lincoln, in Newmarket, Portsmouth, Nashua, Derry.
Get going!
Don't speak English.
Come on, come on.
Оставь меня!
What is this here? What are these writing?
They would round these people up and haul them by train, and these Palmer raids had no legal standing. I mean, they'd figure out where the Russians were living and just burst in on their homes. There's no search warrant, no warrant for arrest, no legal action, no judges involved. It must have been a terrifying experience because many of the Russians didn't speak the language, had no idea what was happening to them. To many of them, this looked like something that had happened back in Russia. Now it was happening in America.
260 people were rounded up in New Hampshire that day. The city of Nashua arrested 140 people alone, the largest single haul in the country. Yet most of these men and women weren't dangerous or a threat to the nation. According to Stu Wallace, most were an anarchist, communist. Some weren't even Russian.
In some cases, they rounded up just about anybody. They rounded up some Poles. They didn't know a single letter of the Cyrillic alphabet. At one point, they found something in Claremont written in a Cyrillic alphabet, and they decided that it was the constitution of the Communist or the Bolshevik Party of Claremont. Well, it wasn't. There was no such thing. In some cases, people were rounded up because they read Russian newspapers. Well, what else could they read? They only read Russian.
The 260 taken into custody that night were first sent to Concord. They eventually joined others rounded up from New England. They were brought to a prison in Boston Harbor, on Deer Island, the island which ironically was the first stop for many of these immigrants when they landed in America. The detainees faced deportation, but most weren't deported. Eventually, most were released. But there were long residual effects for the Russians. In 1920, New Hampshire had the 12th largest population of Russians in the country. But within a decade, many had left. Plymouth State University professor Linda Upham-Borenstein observed how it hit the city of Berlin.
From the Palmer raids, they identified at least 8 local residents from this new community as being communist sympathizers. Out of about 300 Russians, even though only 8 of the community is identified, everybody looked at the remaining Russians with suspicion and distrust. And so there was some tension that grew out of that, and many families then chose to leave. If you go to Berlin, the first thing that I noticed is that beautiful Russian Orthodox Church, and yet church membership is almost non-existent. If you look in the 1929 Berlin Centennial book, they don't even call it the Russian Orthodox Church, they call it the Greek Orthodox Church, when at that time there were no Greeks in Berlin. They don't even want to make that connection.
Today, the state's only active Russian Orthodox Church is Saints Peter's and Paul's in Manchester. I visited the church recently. No one I talked to knew about the Palmer raids, but many still do have long memories of a strong Russian community that has grown and remained an important part of the city and state. And they say the church has played a big part in that.
My name is Don Belinsky. We've been here for about 30 years now and a member of this parish. The church itself was founded in 1915. We have about a third of the congregation, I would say, are descendants from that original migration from the Carpathian, the Galician province. About a third are various ethnicities, American-born converts to the Orthodox faith. And about a third of the congregation now is either from Russia, White Russia, or the Ukraine, and they've come here in the last 5-6 years. One of the things we're grateful to our grandparents for in founding this church is it gives us an anchor to our roots, and it's really a way of keeping it alive, propagating it to our children. As you can see here in the parish, there's quite a few children, and they're taught about the old culture, the old songs, and the old traditions. Without the church, there would be really no other way of carrying that on.
This is my father, and this is my mother right there. This is Mr. Gromko, and he was the head of the church choir. Well, my name is Doris Pierce now, but it was Doris Woroniak. I've been a member of this church ever since I was 10 years old, I would imagine. So I'm going to be 84 in June. My father was one of the founding members of this church. My father never spoke the real Russian. He spoke more or less half Polish and half Ukrainian. It was almost in English. And when we got Father Alexandrov, everything went back to Russian, and we sing English songs. But I really don't know how to speak Russian, truly. But I read it when it's written down on a piece of paper, and I can sing it.
My name is Angelina Androsova, and my father started serving here about 8 years ago. It's very nice when people stay close to their traditions, because what I've noticed that in America, it's very easy to dissolve in the mass culture. But a lot of times, the first thing that's lost is the language. And then after a couple more generations, they lose the traditions, they lose the religion, and they kind of blend in with the rest of the crowd and just remember that their ancestors were once from another country.